Shabbat Shalom. Well, we're going to do something similar to what we did last week. The parasha will become the drasha for this morning. In June of this year, many were stunned and saddened to learn of the death of Anthony Bourdain, a world-renowned chef, author, and host of the hit cable TV series Parts Unknown. This wildly popular television reality series chronicled Bourdain's travels to exotic, sometimes extremely remote places few had ever been. But the truth of the matter is that on these reality shows, when the adventure is over and all the camera gear is packed up, the star gets to go home. But try to imagine for a moment what would happen if the star of such a show discovered that he would have to remain in the last of these far-flung places for the rest of his life. Now rewind 4,000 years. We meet a man named Abram, who lives in the major Mesopotamian city of Ur. Most of the world at this time is polytheistic, and Ur is no exception. People there are polytheistic, but in the midst of such theological confusion, Avram believes in the one true God, who is present everywhere, who is all-powerful and infinitely wise. This God instructs Avram to leave the land of his ancestry for parts unknown, or at least unspecified. And no GPS, informing him that he's never to return. Sorry, I'm fighting a cold. This was something all but unheard of at this time. In the modern era, people think nothing of relocating to other parts of the country or even to other countries for the sake of their career. After all, you can always fly home to visit. But in the ancient world, the idea of picking up and moving away from one's ancestral home was almost unthinkable. This week's parasha is entitled Lech Lecha, which is translated Go Forth, and spans Genesis chapters 12 through 17. The focus is on Avram, whose name will later be changed to Avraham, the father not only of the Jewish people, but in a real way, the father in the faith to all who follow Yeshua the Messiah. Just as Noah was a singularly righteous man in his generation, so too Avram had a very real and close relationship with God. What made this one man so different? In a word, obedience. Chapter 12 opens up with God telling Avram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. Now, the journey had actually begun in the previous generation with his father, Terah. We're not told why Terah left Ur of the Chaldees. What we do know is that he intended to bring his family to Canaan, but only got as far as Haran, where he settled. But even that journey was considerable, about 550 miles from Ur to Haran by foot or camel. Notice there's a threefold aspect to God's command to Avram to depart. Leave your country, your people, and your father's household. It moves from the general to the specific, from the public sphere to the very personal. He didn't just leave the great city of Ur, but he was leaving his people, the Chaldeans, and the culture in which he'd grown up, and not only his people, but the household of his father. I'm guessing that had to be difficult emotionally. It is in our nature to hold on to what's familiar. We tend to fear the unknown. Avram had remained those years in Haran with his father, Terah, as is fitting for a son. When Avram was 75 years of age, his father, Terah, passed away at age 205. And now, Adonai summons him to complete that journey, summons him to leave. But included with that command are a series of remarkable promises. Listen to this. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great. Speaking of honor and renown. I will bless those who bless you. The one who curses you, I will curse. In you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Wow. What amazing and lavish promises. Do you remember how in the previous parasha, Noah spoke a blessing over Japheth, saying, may God enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem. The implication of that prophecy was that blessing would come to many nations represented by Japheth through the covering and provision made through Shem, the Jewish people. Now in chapter 12, that blessing is more narrowly focused so that it will come through the ancestral line of one particular Shemite, Avraham. And verse 4 holds the key to that transgenerational worldwide blessing. Here it is. It's so simple. So Avram left as the Lord had told him. That's it. Right there. If you want to know what was so special about Avraham, it's summed up in that one word, obedience. God said, leave, and Avram got up and left. Command and comply. No questioning of orders, no protest, no plea of extenuating circumstances. He simply did what Adonai told him to do. If you get just one thing out of this parasha turned drasha this morning, indeed, if you get one thing out of the life of Avraham, let it be obedience. Do the things Adonai tells you to do. Don't do the things Adonai tells you not to do. And for the most part, he's already told you what to do and what not to do, and it's in the Word. We go on. It says, Lot went with him. Avram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. So Avram departed in obedience to God's command at age 75. So much for the excuse that somebody's too old to change. Personally, I think it is super encouraging when older people are willing to courageously part ways with the majority for the sake of following the truth. Reminds me of Psalm 92. By the way, Psalm 92 is the text of our beautiful banner over there, where it says, the righteous man will flourish like the palm tree. He will grow like a cedar in Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still yield fruit in old age. They shall be full of sap and very green. It's one of my favorite passages. Maybe there's somebody here at Shema this morning or listening online who, in listening to this message, you know you've been sitting on the fence. Maybe you know deep down that Yeshua really is the Messiah, but you're afraid of the repercussions if you declare yourself a believer. Let me encourage you, exhort you to follow the example of Abraham. And be obedient to God no matter what the majority says. Avram set out for parts unknown, but firmly trusting in God and taking with him his nephew Lot. Lot was the son of Haran, Avram's older brother. Haran had died many years earlier in Ur of the Chaldees. Now, verse 5 says, Avram took Sarai, his wife, excuse me, Avram took Sarai his wife and Lot his nephew and all their possessions which they had accumulated and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. You know, we tend to think of Avram traveling with Sarai and Lot and a few people, but that isn't correct. He represented an enormous company of people, at least several hundred, and probably well more than that. We'll revisit that in chapter 14. Now, a famine in the land forces them to sojourn for a period of time down in Egypt. But a crisis ensues. In order to avoid potential conflict over his wife Sarai, who is described as beautiful, which probably refers to her regal manner of dress rather than her looks, Avram lies to Pharaoh, saying that Sarai is his sister. When the truth comes out, Avram and Sarai are promptly escorted out of town. It wouldn't be the last time they tried to manipulate events instead of simply trusting in God. Now, in chapter 14, the family journeys to the Negev, at which point it becomes apparent to Avram and Lot that their flocks are simply too numerous to occupy the same pasture land. And their workers began fighting amongst each other. So rather than quarrel over it, Avram suggests that he and Lot part ways. And he gave Lot the first choice, first dibs on which direction he prefers to go. Lot had taken a fancy to what was then the very lush Jordan Valley to the east. And so he chooses to settle in the vicinity of Sodom, which is described here in Genesis as an exceedingly wicked city. Chapter 14 also chronicles a war between the nine kings in that region. And in the midst of all this conflict, the five kings against the four, Lot is captured. He's taken captive. When word of this comes to Avram, the text tells us that he set out with 318 trained fighters, all of whom we are told in Scripture had been born in his household, and they go in order to rescue his nephew. Now think about this. If Avram had his own trained army, his own personal army of 318 men, how many people altogether must have been in his household? My guess is that with all their wives, children, and if we consider that there would have been other men who weren't soldiers, we're easily looking at 1,000 or more people that represent that company we call Avraham. So I can just imagine seeing that caravan from miles away. Now, there's something else to consider with that number 318. It's a very specific number, not 30,000, not 300,000. It's a very specific number, 318. It's like the 153 fish caught in the net after Yeshua's resurrection when he told the disciples to throw their net on the right side of the boat. Very specific number. An unexaggerated number like 318 reflects accurate and literal chronicling of an event, as opposed to the kinds of inflated numbers and hyperbolic descriptions that typically characterize mythology. Genesis is a reliably historical document. And by the way, I was always curious whether the number 318 had significance in the numerical equivalent of the Hebrew letters. Now, I don't generally delve into gematria, but in this case, you might find it interesting to know that 318 corresponds to a couple of different Hebrew words and names, one of which is Yashuv, he returns, perhaps a reference to the fact that Abraham will return successfully from that mission. It also corresponds to the Hebrew names Eliezer, my God is a help, or Azriel, which is simply in reverse, God helps, the help of God. Eliezer or Azriel, which would again also point to God being Avram's help and giving him victory, he and his soldiers. And that's what happened. Avram quickly and thoroughly defeated those who had taken Lot, and he rescued his nephew. Now, this is where the story gets really interesting and speaks to the issue of choices that we make in life. Returning from battle, Avram is met by two kings and presented with two very different conflicting offers. In this moment, he will make an important choice. The effects of this choice will reverberate down the corridors of history. Extremely important. Bera, the king of Sodom, offers him riches, the spoils of war, in exchange for an alliance, asks him to make a treaty with him. Avram flatly rejects that offer. He wants nothing to do with Sodom or its king. Next, Melchizedek, which means king of righteousness, the king of Salem, who we are told is also a priest and a fellow worshiper of the one true God, offers him bread and wine. Riches or lunch? Avram made the right decision. He gladly accepts and chooses to identify with Melchizedek rather than make an unholy alliance with Sodom. He even pays Melchizedek a tithe. Now, many people wonder whether Melchizedek was actually Yeshua in a pre-incarnate appearance. That may well be the case. It's possible. But I think it's more likely that he was simply a fellow righteous monotheist who was the king of a real city and lived at that time. The writer of the letter to the Messianic Jews, Hebrews, points out that we don't know anything about Melchizedek's father or mother. We have no record of his family line or ancestry. So the writer of Hebrews kind of makes a comparison. Like Messiah Yeshua, Melchizedek's origins are kind of shrouded in a bit of mystery. People didn't know. Where did Yeshua get all this wisdom? He didn't go to any of our yeshivas. So there's a little bit of mystery here. Add to this his name, Melchizedek, king of righteousness, and it makes for great speculation, but only that. In chapter 15 and again in chapter 17, God promises a son to Avram, who is nearly 100 years old at this point and thus far childless, even telling him in advance to name his son Yitzchak, Isaac, which means laughter. Both he and Sarai, at different times, would laugh when they heard this news that they were going to have a child together. But Adonai wasn't pulling his leg. He meant it, and went so far as to seal the promise with a covenant. But Avram gets more than he bargained for in this moment. Adonai shows him the future, declaring that his descendants will be enslaved for 400 years in a foreign country, after which they will come out with great wealth and will return to Canaan and take possession of the land. Chapter 16 is an object lesson on so many levels. Sarai, now almost 90 years old, and impatient at not having any children, convinces Avram to take her handmaid, Hagar, an Egyptian, as a concubine in order to bear children to Sarai by proxy. Avram goes along with the plan, and the result is Ishmael. And the further result is generations of unremitting strife between Ishmael's descendants and the descendants of their not yet conceived son, Isaac. At the risk of stating the obvious, can I just say it? God doesn't need you to help him fulfill his promises. Now, there's a sign. Sometimes if you're in an auto shop or a motorcycle repair shop, and if the owner has a sense of humor, you'll see a sign hanging there. And it'll give the regular hourly rate for the labor to repair your car. Regular hourly rate, $75. Underneath that, if you watch and ask questions, $100 per hour. If you offer advice, $150 per hour. If we are fixing your repair, $200 per hour. He doesn't need our help, you guys. If it's true that those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength, then I suggest that those who will not wait upon the Lord will renew tsuris, troubles for themselves. Usually when people try to help God embarrassment follows, and more often than not, the situation is made worse. Finally, in chapter 17, God tells Avram, who is now 99 years old and still without a child by Sarai, that his name is to be changed to Avraham, meaning father of a multitude. Likewise, Sarai's name is to be changed to Sarah. Each name acquires the addition of the letter He into their name, possibly from the first letter of the word Hamon, meaning multitude, since God promises each of them that multitudes of people will descend from them. Avraham is still skeptical that he and Sarah, at their advanced ages, could have a son together, and he suggests that Ishmael be the heir. God promises that Ishmael will also be blessed and become a great nation, but that his covenant, God's covenant, will continue through Isaac, a child to be conceived by miracle. And it is at this pivotal time that Avraham is given the physical sign of the covenant, circumcision. Adonai commands that every one of Abraham's male descendants for all generations to come be circumcised on the eighth day following his birth. Covenant ceremonies always involved blood. For example, when you read in Genesis 15, 18, that God made a covenant with Abraham, you should note that the Hebrew word for made a covenant is actually karat, which is actually translated cut. God cut a covenant with him. Once again, Avram did what God told him to do. He had himself circumcised. I don't know if I want to dwell too much on how that might have felt. He had himself circumcised and circumcised every male in his home according to the command. This wasn't an easy thing, but being a true follower of the God of Israel isn't for the faint of heart. Avraham's courage and resolve matched his obedience. Now, concerning the cutting of covenants and the necessity of blood, I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little more about this. It was this very question, the idea of cutting a covenant and that blood is part of these covenants. It was that very question that propelled Stan Telchin, the late Stan Telchin, a wealthy Jewish insurance salesman, to come to faith in Yeshua. Having studied these things extensively, and really he was studying them to try to disprove this whole thing to his daughter, who had become a Messianic Jew, he set out to disprove her, and guess what? And then he became a believer. But he studied these things extensively, and he asked himself, if circumcision was the cutting on man's end, where was the cutting on God's end? Then it suddenly dawned on him. He envisioned Yeshua dying, shedding his own blood, much like the innocent animals sacrificed on the Mizbeach, the altar of the temple. Abraham's sons would be cut as tokens, circumcised. God's son would be cut in the ultimate way. This, in fact, is how all the families of the earth would be blessed through Abraham, by the atoning death and the glorious resurrection of the greatest of his descendants, Yeshua the Messiah. Stories told of a couple, and this will sound very familiar to any of you with children. There was a couple who had problems trying to get their son to clean his room. They weren't alone, right? Okay. It was so frustrating. The son would always agree to tidy up, but then wouldn't follow through. After high school, the young man joined the Marine Corps. Hoorah. When he came home for leave after boot camp, his father asked him what he had learned in the service. "Dad," he said, "I learned what now means." Parashat Lech Lecha is filled with real history and wise instruction. But as we bring this morning's message to a close, I want to stress just one thing: Abraham's obedience. He is the quintessential example of what a believer's life should look like. He wasn't perfect, far from it, but this man genuinely believed God's promises and he did what God told him to do. Do you have the faith of Abraham? Do you have the obedience of Abraham? Do you have the courage of Abraham to journey wherever God leads you, even to parts unknown? Your destiny and the legacy you leave behind you depend on your willingness to go where he sends you, do what he tells you to do, and to trust in him for the outcome. Lord God of Israel, help me to walk in the footsteps of Abraham. Maybe you can pray this with me. I confess that too often, Lord, I have been cowardly. Too often, I have been disobedient. And too often, I have been anxious when I could have just trusted you. Please help me, Heavenly Father, to learn from and imitate Father Abraham. B'Shem Yeshua.